Good evening, everyone. This is host Terry Lynn Coop on the Blue Plate Special, and tonight on the menu we have Greg Barth, author of the Selena series and host of his own show in the network, Noir and the Radio. Greg has written Selena, Diesel Therapy, Suicide Lounge, Road Carnage, Bonafide Jobs, and the newest Selena book, Everglade. He cut his literary teeth reading the Parker novels, and you can see the influence in Barth's lean, compact prose. And as a fiction writer, he has a thing for amoral characters in bad situations without good options. We'll be talking more about that tonight. Greg, how are you doing?
Hey, Terry, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on. It's great to get to talk to you tonight.
It's a real pleasure. Let's dive right in. Who is Selena?
Well, when we first meet Selena, she's a young woman, and when it comes to, you know, self-destructive problems, she's got the whole set. She's an alcoholic, she's an addict, she's a stripper, a prostitute, she's a cutter, bulimic, you know, the very definition of self-destructive. And you know, actually, if you asked her when we first meet her, if she's happy, she would probably say yes. You know, she's been in an alcohol-induced stupor for about 14 years, and even has to pass a breathalyzer test with her ignition interlock system to be able to start her car. And so she's teetering on the brink. Yeah. And, you know, a careless act of what she thinks is petty theft, you know, puts her in the target of a crime syndicate. And, you know, it costs her a lot. They beat her to within an inch of her life, you know, to the extent of broken bones, you know, cracked skull, teeth knocked out. You know, she's in pretty bad shape, and goes through an extensive recovery process where, you know, she becomes a little more self-aware of who she is in her life and where she's at. And she realizes she can't really be happy until she gets justice on these people that hurt her so bad. And that kind of launches her life and the career enterprise, you might say. And, you know, we follow her through five books before it all comes to an end.
I was reading some of the reviews of your books and came across the one by Will Vaharo of Thrillville, and he equates Selena back to the old school grindhouse type movie characters. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, I think so. When I first started thinking about writing Selena, I was actually planning to write a horror novel, and I was doing some research, and I read Carol Clover's book, Men, Women, and Chainsaws. And there was, it's a great book about gender in the horror movies, but yeah, it's a clever title. But she had an essay in there about the old, rape revenge, genre. And, that just kind of lit, you know, some inspiration in me. I went back and watched, you know, movies like, Death Wish with Charles Bronson and that kind of thing, just for some inspiration. So it, you know, it really did kind of stem from that. And, you know, just today we've released, All Due Respect has, you can get all five novels in one, ebook, and the cover that, the artist Nathan Freeman put together for us is actually, you know, titled Grindhouse Selena. So I think a lot of people have kind of picked up on that element of it.
Oh, that's superb. So you're saying there's an omnibus edition out today?
Just came out today. All five books in one e-copy. It won't be released in paperback. It's just too big for that. But you can get the whole thing for a pretty good deal.
And will that be available on the usual suspects like Amazon and Barnes & Nobles, et cetera?
Yeah, it's only on Amazon at this time.
Okay. And that's how you mentioned All Due Respect. Tell me a little bit about them.
Well, All Due Respect, they started out as a, as a magazine publisher, basically with short crime fiction. Actually, they started out as a website. I want to say Alex Czak started the website, and then Chris Radigan and Mike Monson took over at some point. And you know, a few months into publishing their magazine, they decided to start publishing some books. I knew Mike through Facebook, and he had read like an early version of Selena when it was just about 100 pages long, really the first third of the first book. And he called me up, you know, one night, and we talked about, you know, what we could do together with Selena through All Due Respect Books. And they've put out quite a few books over the last 2 or 3 years. I've read most of them. They're, you know, they're really hard-hitting crime fiction is what these guys put out.
I was looking through some of the reviews for the very first Selena, and one of the one stars is, this is a trashy dime store novel. So would
yes,
you say
it
that's
is.
A compliment?
Yes. That's what I was going for. You know, those old paperbacks on the spin rack in the back of the drugstore with the lurid covers on them, this
yes.
would fit right in there.
That's excellent. So Selena starts, so obviously book one starts her adventures in crime, and then you move into one of the best titles I think I've ever heard, which is Diesel Therapy, book two.
Yeah.
Where, again, I'm going to channel Will Vaharo, because he says this so much better than I do, where you head into the old school trope of women in prison. Tell me a little bit about that one.
Yeah. So Diesel Therapy is a form of punishment in federal prisons. And what they do, the concept is this. If you, a prisoner is most at risk of escape when they're not inside the prison. So if you're transporting a prisoner anywhere, you basically render that convict motionless. You know, you chain them up in such a way, there's a waist chain, leg irons, handcuffs, and they sit, you know, in transit for hours at a time, and they can't move. And it's very
mm-hmm.
uncomfortable. So when you transport a prisoner, legitimately, that's one thing. But what we know from, I'm thinking of Susan McDougall, you know, Whitewater era, they put this lady
mm-hmm.
On the bus, and she never went anywhere. They kept her in transit for months to break her down, to get her to give up the goods, you know, on the politicians. So, you know, when Selena winds up in prison, of course, in federal prison after the first book. And, you know, I tried to think of, realistically, how do you break somebody out of prison? It's the hardest thing I've ever done, is to try to get her out of prison, because, you just can't fake that kind of thing. So I thought about how do I get her out on the road, away from the bars, so that she has a chance to escape. And then I thought of the Diesel Therapy concept.
Excellent. Again, too, I'll just channel Will here. You know, he says Selena is riffing off another classic 70s exploitation grindhouse genre, women in prison, as the most complex and compelling anti-heroine in modern noir fiction. I think that pretty much sums up what you just said. That's excellent. Again, that one to me is just absolutely intriguing. So I'm going to keep on rolling here into book three, since am I correct that the series feeds on the previous, each one feeds on the previous book?
It does, yeah.
Now, a question I always ask of a writer who does series, do you have to go back to the first book, or where's a good place to jump into the series?
In this case, you do, because these are not, you know, episodic novels like, you know, James Bond. You could read any James Bond novel. Doesn't matter what order you read them in. Each book is its own unit. With Selena, you know, her story starts at one point and ends at a very different point. and it would be difficult to read any of them out of order. You know, maybe Road Carnage would work out of order. That's probably the only one, I think.
Okay. So then we're at the Diesel, we're at the end of Diesel Therapy. I assume she's out of prison. We won't go into the details how.
Mm-hmm.
And we are at book three, Suicide Lounge. So where are we at now?
So Suicide Lounge is, you know, Selena at this point has ascended to the top of the crime syndicate that she's toppled, basically. And her crew is being threatened by, you know, another bad guy who's, you know, kind of coming into their territory and trying to take over and, you know, kills some of her friends that she's made at this point. So it's about, you know, is she capable of leadership in this setting? And, you know, how does she rally the forces to deal with this threat? Can she do it? And, you know, what happens if it just all falls apart? That's basically the premise of that that story.
Mayhem ensues.
Yes, it does.
Do you keep up the same level of basically that grindhouse style violence through the entire series?
They are all very violent. I think Road Carnage, the one that comes after the Suicide Lounge, is the most violent, and this is really a high speed race across the Southwest. Selena is trying to stop someone who poses a very serious threat to her and the people she loves, and it's in a lot of ways it's a road novel. She has her friend traveling with her, and you know, they're kind of on opposite ends of the spectrum, but they have, you know, a few things in common, and just some horrible things happen to them. But like I always say, you should see the other guy.
So now we've started at kind of the rape revenge fantasy, move through women in prison, and now we have the road novel, the Vanishing Point, the
absolutely,
the bulk.
Yeah.
Excellent.
In fact, I list Will Vaharo in the acknowledgments of that Road Carnage, because I reached out to him to find out, you know, he's the expert on all these movies. I reached out to him to find out what are the essential, you know, road novels like Vanishing Point, you know, all those great movies from the drive-in theaters of the 70s. And he sent me a list, and man, that was so helpful just to get into the mood for writing that book.
So what else was on the list besides Vanishing Point?
Crazy Larry, Dirty Mary. I might have that one backwards.
Yes.
What else? There's a stack of them. Some Steve McQueen stuff. Gosh, I can't remember them all, but me and my wife and my son, we basically did nothing but watch DVDs about car chases and all that kind of thing for a few weeks. It was enjoyable.
Your little bit of trivia for the day, my little 6 degrees of separation is Dirty Mary and Crazy Larry was filmed in my hometown where I went to high school.
Ah.
And I used to shop at that supermarket that they robbed in the beginning.
Yeah.
That just made Sonora, California. We were just all so proud of ourselves for that. And it is one of the essential chase movies. In my book, the characters pick up a 71 Challenger as a throwback to Vanishing Point.
Well, Selena has a 71 Challenger in Road Carnage.
Oh. it's the greatest car ever. Absolute greatest car ever. In high school, I dated a guy who rolled in the 71 Challenger, and that's how I saw Star Wars originally. So you have my approval on that. So
very
now
nice.
we've moved in, and we go on to
Everglades. Yeah, Everglade
okay.
is the end.
We're up to
this
present
is, this
time.
Is the final book. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So you know, Everglade is the most different of all of them. You know, at the beginning, we find that the drugs and the alcohol, you know, have really started to take their toll on Selena, and she's living a pretty empty life at the beginning of that book. You know, there are people who care about her, you know, people who work with her and love her, but not all of them necessarily have her best interests at heart. And in this book, you know, she really confronts her worst enemy of all, and that's herself. And I don't want to give too much away because it's, you know, it's the final book in the series.
Mm-hmm.
Trust me, there's, you know, there's blood and guts, you know, there's mayhem and violence and all of that, but it really is about is she capable of breaking out of this self-destructive path that she's on? And I think that that I leave her with options. We don't necessarily know which direction she's going to go, but she has good choices available to her for the first time in her life.
So this is the last book. I'm not going to say the series. This is the last book in the arc.
It is, yeah. Could there be more? There could be. There could be. But this is the end of, you know, this chunk. And where, you know, Everglade really stemmed from a late night conversation with my mother. This was in the summer of 2015, and the first novel had just come out. And Mom had read maybe the first half of it at that point. And, you know, Selena's is not an easy novel to give to your mother to read. So, you know, we sat up and we talked about it quite a bit that night. And, you know, she told me something she'd kind of like to see happen with Selena by the end of the arc. And, you know, I'd already written and turned in Diesel Therapy and Suicide Lounge. And I had a good idea about the fourth. You know, and at the time, I really couldn't see how I could make that fifth novel happen. But I couldn't get it out of my mind. And when I got back from that trip, I sat down and wrote Everglade in it was like a manic blur over the course of about 12 days. In fact, I wrote Everglade before I wrote Road Carnage because it was just such a, I was just so inspired to do it. And, you know, the thing that's always caught me off guard with this series is that people seem to care about Selena and her relationships and her as a person and about the things that happened to her. And when I wrote the first one, you know, I put so many unlikable things into her. I didn't think anybody really would care. So that always kind of caught me off guard.
So when you started with Selena, did you intend it on being this series arc, or did you think it was going to be one and done, or what?
I started out writing a short story that I was going to submit to All Due Respect magazine. And when I finished that story, it came in at about 100 pages, which is not a short story. And it's not really anything you can do anything with. And then I kind of sat and thought about, well, I wonder what happens next. And then I wrote that. And then, well, I wonder what happens next. And it, you know, there was just this logical course of her life. I didn't really intend for it to be five books or, you know, any number of books, but I never felt like I was finished with her. And I could hear her voice so clearly in my head. I could just sit down and write, you know, as Selena. I knew what she was going to do. I knew the bad mistakes she was going to make, and I knew how she would get out of it. It was just, it became very easy to write as Selena.
Yeah. Excellent. So I know you're kind of catching your breath because Everglade just came out and the omnibus, et cetera. But what's next?
I've
you
got
know, that's all you care about.
Yeah, I've got something I just finished, you know, kind of a draft of, and I've got it. I sent it out day before yesterday to some beta readers. It is a Western of sorts. It's called The Bloodletting, and it takes place in Missouri, Kansas, during the Civil War, 1863. This is at the time when, you know, the Bleeding Kansas, Kansas and Missouri had been basically at war with one another since 1856. So it's you know, it's just a very dark Western of sorts that, you know, I'm pretty excited about. You know, some of the feedback I've gotten from the beta readers has been very helpful. I was told that you know, I am wading deep into dangerous waters with this one, just because of the nature of it. I don't really write about good people, you know, for the most part. So there's, you know, it might be a little offensive in places, but we'll see.
Hey, I live in Fort Scott, Kansas, 8 miles from the border.
There you go. You know what I'm talking about. Yeah. So this novel takes place right after the slaughter at Lawrence, Kansas, you know, days after.
I actually just finished the first draft of a short historical romance that takes that ends up on the day of Quantrell's raid on Lawrence. It's a fascinating time in history. In my town, Fort Scott, there actually is a Fort Scott, and there were two hotels that were on either side of the parade grounds, and one was a Jayhawker Hotel, and the other one was a Bushwhacker Hotel.
Oh, my goodness.
And more than once, they'd sit on the balconies and shoot at each other.
I've got to look into that. I can't wait to read your story. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's a small world, right?
And it's an underserved time in American history as far as writing's concerned.
Yeah.
Because in the immediate aftermath, which is what my next book in this little series is going to be about, is something called, did you run across General Order Number 11?
Absolutely. My characters, they ride through, you know, Clay County, Missouri, Jackson County, Missouri, mm-hmm. Jackson County, like right after General Order 11, it's evacuated. Everything's burnt. I mean, it's a rich place to ride in.
People talk about the Japanese internment as being, you know, something that was unique in American history, and it's not. I mean, General Order Number 11 was probably the first large-scale internment in 1863. So I cannot wait to read that book. And it was a stark and uncompromising time. Of course, my book is a romance, so it tends to be more, you know, the human aspect of it without getting too much into the carnage. But it's just a fascinating time in American history, and I can't wait to read your new book. I think that'll be fantastic.
I love your words, a stark and uncompromising time, indeed.
I mean, in Osceola, Missouri, there are still, you know, monuments to the destruction when Kansas, you know, it wasn't all from Missouri. When Kansas spilled across the border and basically destroyed the town of Osceola. And put it this way, there's still hard feelings.
I bet, you know, yeah.
There's they actually created, just another bit of trivia for you, a couple of years ago, they actually created what they called the Kansas-Missouri Reconciliation Commission.
Seriously.
Of historians who are trying to do exactly what the title says. They're trying to reconcile some of these very hard feelings that still exist between the two states. It's the Civil War didn't just happen in the South. I mean, it's still extremely raw here as well. So I can't wait for your book, because I'll know exactly where it's about.
Go ahead. I was going to say, it's very hard to find. It's very hard to find unbiased research material on the subject.
Oh no, absolutely. But look up Fort Scott. We're actually a national park here. My little town is actually part of the national park system of the actual fort. And it has an interesting and checkered history in its own right through the whole Bleeding Kansas Civil War period. And anytime you want to chat more about it, please message me. I could go on all night about that particular subject. But
I
Let's
will,
also
yeah,
talk.
because this book is not the end of it. There's a second one that I'll be writing as well. So,
Sweet. I can't wait.
Yeah.
And now, talking about, you're also part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Why don't you tell me a little bit about your show?
Yeah, I host Noir on the Radio every Saturday night at 9 o'clock and generally broadcast for about 30 minutes. Most of the time, I will have a crime writer on and interview that author. We have done a couple of topical panels. I had a group of writers come on, and we talked about Richard Stark, one of my favorite writers who's deceased. And then more recently, we did the same thing with Jim Thompson. And we're planning another to discuss Chester Himes and, you know, his influence. So these writers are no longer living. Yeah, we can't get them on the show. So I'll assemble a team of writers, you know, former guests usually. And we talk about, you know, those writers and their influence.
May I recommend, if you haven't already, may I recommend inviting Danny Gardner to be on that panel?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think I extended him an invitation in the email when I was when I'm putting together the Chester Himes panel discussion.
Because he turned me on to Chester Himes as I talked to him on the broadcast last week. I told him he filled a hole in my cultural knowledge by turning me on to Chester Himes. And have you read his book?
Danny Gardner, I've not. I'm very familiar with it, and it's, you know, it's on my to be read list, but I've not gotten down to it yet.
I've recommend
heard
it.
Wonderful things. Wonderful things.
I recommend it highly. It is as stark and uncompromising as you could possibly want to read. It's set in Chicago and Southern Illinois in 1952, and is the adventures of Elliot Caprice. So, who are some of the people you've had on your show?
Oh wow! So I've had Reed Farrell Coleman, David Joy. I've had Robert Knott, Paul Heatley, James DiBiasio. Wow, let's see. I can probably bring up the list. I've had last night was Eric Van Lustbader.
Wow, excellent.
Yeah, yeah. Rusty Barnes, Weamy Wallace. I had him on. Ben Jones, Elka Ray, Paul Bishop. I could go on and on. It's been a fantastic experience. Dharma Kelleher has been on a couple of times.
How long have you been on? No, that's fine. How long have you been on?
Just over a year at this point.
So if somebody wanted to find you, where would they look? Is there a Facebook page?
There's a Facebook page for Noir on the Radio. There's an author page for Greg Barth, and then I also have my personal page, Greg Barth, on Facebook. I'll happily, you know, friend anybody that wants to friend me. If you want me to like something, I'll like it. You know, I'm a pleaser on Facebook. I'll give you a thumbs up for just about anything. Now, if you want to like find my Amazon page, if you go to Amazon and search Selena, you're going to find the finest Selena Gomez merchandise known to man, but you won't find
me. I searched you by your name and was able to bring up your author page that had all of your.
Greg Barth is the way to go, yeah.
Definitely. All of your books on it. So now we know, here's a question I ask everybody is, what are you reading right now?
I'm reading a lot of Westerns right now. I'm reading a lot of research material, you know, on the Missouri-Kansas border war. A lot of Native American research. From a fiction standpoint, besides the Westerns, you know, I've really gotten into, like, you know, just off the top of my head, Paul Heatley had a book out recently called Fat Boy. Daniel Velasity, A New and Different Kind of Pain. Rob Pierce, don't know if you've read Rob Pierce or not, but if you've not read with the right enemies. You should put down whatever you're looking at right now and read with the right enemies. Alex Cusack, Chris Rattigan, those guys are great.
Fantastic, fantastic. So those are books that you'd recommend.
Absolutely. Yeah, Tony Knighton, another one, great writer.
Superb. And then, too, are you going to be coming out to any conferences or any sort of appearances or anything in the next year or so where we might be able to run into you?
Nothing planned aside from, NoirCon in 2018. I really want to get up there with Lou Boxer and be a part of that scene. We've chatted a few times. He read Everglade. He was, I think, the first person to read it and gave me some feedback on it. So NoirCon is a place that I want to get to in 2018. But that's really the only thing on my radar at this point. There might be a noir at the bar that comes together in Lexington, Kentucky. I'm, fingers crossed on that. If it does, I'll be there and let everybody know when and where. But aside from that, I'm going to be in Bowling Green, Kentucky right away.
Where's NoirCon at?
It's in Philadelphia, and they have it every 2 years. Lou Boxer hosts that, and it's usually in October, November time frame. And they had one in 2016, I guess, and the next one will be November 2018.
Well, if you think you can pry yourself loose for the day, I can also highly recommend Murder and Mayhem in Milwaukee.
Okay.
That's in November.
I'll make a note of that one.
It's hosted by John and Ruth Jordan of Crime Spree magazine.
Yeah.
It's held in an old church in Milwaukee that's been turned into like a convention space. I mean, it has a bar.
Oh, that sounds cool.
No, it's just a great time. It's a real low-key, just one day, more of as much of a party as anything else. So I definitely, definitely recommend it. And that is fantastic. I can't wait to read the new one, the Western. I mean, you're at the beta stage right now, correct?
Yeah, it's the title is The Bloodletting at this point. I'm going to send it off. Rob Pierce has edited everything, the last five things I've put out. I couldn't imagine working with anybody else, so I'm going to get that off to him. Hopefully the end of this month. And, this is one of those things, if it ever sees the light of day, it'll probably be a miracle just because I don't know who will take it. But, it may just happen.
I think it's going to happen. I think you've hit on a part of history that not a lot of people know too much about, and that is definitely underserved in all manner of literature.
Yeah.
Well, if you ever find yourself in Kansas, I'll take you to the local sites. The Meredithine Massacre and the Mine Creek Battlefield, and go to Lawrence too, where they actually have a walking tour, because that's what we're. I told you. We're all about that here on the border.
That'd be great. Yeah, I need to get some firsthand research done.
Well, I'm going to do a little bit of, it's been great talking to you. I'm going to do a little bit of the typical housekeeping here with the announcements. And I want you to come back on when the new book is out. You down with that?
Yeah, Terry, this has been great. I would love to.
All right. I will talk to you more then. And thank you very much for being on the menu tonight.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And support for this broadcast is made possible by Down and Out Books, celebrating 6 years of award-winning crime fiction. And you can find out more at www.downandoutbooks.com. Also, we'll be keeping an eye on them through VoucherCon this year, where they have six, Anthony nominations. And the Blue Plate Special is a copyrighted podcast solely owned by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. You can find Authors on the Air and the Blue Plate Special on Facebook to stay up to date on the latest broadcast. With that, I'll say goodnight to everybody and have a good evening. Thank you.